Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary. Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
From the Society for Nautical Research, in partnership with Lloyd's Register Foundation, I'm Sam Willis, and this is the Mariner's Mirror podcast, the world's number one podcast dedicated to all of maritime history. Hello everyone, and welcome to the Mariner's Mirror podcast, and to this, the fourth of several episodes on Maritime Australia. Our regular listeners will know that here on the Mariner's Mirror podcast, one of the things we love is a ship model. And if you're interested in these remarkable objects that I believe are so underappreciated and in particular underused as an historical source by people writing about the past, please do check out the Lloyd's Register Foundation's amazing new project, Maritime Innovation in Miniature, where they are filming the world's best ship models using the very latest camera equipment. If you want to find out more, just Google Maritime Innovation in Miniature and you'll find your way to the project's homepage. It really is quite fantastic. Now, it's impossible to visit either the Western Australian Maritime Museum or the Western Australian Shipwrecks Museum without being bowled over by their wonderful ship models. And I very much hope to bring you those in more detail in the future. Some are old, some are new, some are even made by a model maker who lives in Perth and who has devoted his life to making the most magnificent ship models, several of which are on display in the Western Australian Maritime Museum. This remarkable man is Jerry Westenberg, and Jerry very kindly invited me to his house. Well, I think that house is not necessarily the right term. It's more of a museum of ship models in which Jerry's family live. Where you might have a map on the wall, Jerry has a ship model. Where you might have a photo of your family on the wall, Jerry has a ship model. Where you might have a clock on the wall, where you might have wallpaper on the wall, Jerry has ship models. If Jerry's house was a fish, then the models would be the scales. If his house was a medieval knight, his models would be the armour. Well, I think you get the idea. Jerry has been handcrafting scale models for well over 50 years, and he's built more than 130 in that time. He started his lifelong job by trying to modify a 1 to 600 scale Airfix kit of HMS Ajax, trying to turn it into HMAS Perth. And he claims with absolute honesty that his first attempt was amazing. If you kept both eyes closed and looked the other way, Jerry says it was 100% accurate. Over time, he has improved his skills and he's found a scale that works very well for him, 1 to 192, which sounds a bit weird, but is actually from the empirical scale of 1 inch to every 16 feet. Over the years, he's built such ships as RMS Queen Mary, a Roman Byreme, an Egyptian Royal Barge, HMS Hood, HMAS Sydney 1, 2, 3 and 4, the Royal Yacht Britannia, HMS Bearham, to name but a few. He's had two exhibitions at the Western Australian Maritime Museum in Fremantle, the first in 2019, the second in 2021, and there's a third exhibition coming soon this April and running for approximately 3 months. The centrepiece of his collection consists of over 40 Australian fighting ships, tracing all major classes from the inception of the Royal Australian Navy to today's modern fleet. As ever, I hope you enjoy listening to him as much as I enjoyed talking with him. Here is the welcoming, very knowledgeable, enormously good fun, Jerry. I'm in a house in a suburb of Perth in Western Australia, and I'm with Jerry, and we've just come in, and it's one of those houses where you couldn't come in here and not notice a shit model, but Jerry's been pointing them out to me, and actually, once you get your eye in, you realise they're everywhere. It was downstairs, I thought there was one, there were five, and then we went into another room and there were more. Now we've come up the stairs to Jerry's workshop, and there are, in this quite small but very nice room, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Jerry, how many are there here?
There'd be about 40 in here.
40, right, that's why I can't count them, and they're all magnificent. There's a little desk here as well. I don't really know where to start. Jerry, tell me about the one that's on your desk and that you're in the middle of making.
Okay, this one is HMAS Melbourne, and I'm building her as she was the day that she sank HMAS Voyager by accident.
Give us a date and a time of ship.
What are we 10th looking? Of February 1964.
And she is a...
She's a Majestic class aircraft carrier. So yeah. We bought them off the British, and she was the very first one with an angled flight deck. And she's such a small aircraft carrier that when the Americans cross-trained, they were almost not wanting to land on her because, like, do you want to land on that? No way.
Right. Let me just describe the desk. This is going to be aired as the day in the life of a model maker. So, Jerry's desk, let's talk about it. There are approximately 100 million different things on this desk, and none of them seem to be in any particular order. There is a pot of tweezers of varying size. There are as a pot of, I don't know, maybe 30 different paintbrushes, loads of strips of, was this plastic or wood?
Yeah, plastic.
Loads of plastic. Loads of reels of tape. There must be 15 different types of tape. You've got reels of, what's that, copper wire?
Yep.
And is it the two types of copper wire?
Yeah, so this one's the guardrail size, and that's for the uprights of the guardrails.
Right, we've got a jar full of 30... Oh, are these files?
Yeah.
Right, tiny files. Very, very sharp. And we've got some pens for marking things and a whole host of other things. Jerry, what is important here that I've missed?
There's 3D printed items there. There's a mould for a Chinook helicopter, which goes on one of my ships. There's pliers over there. There's my patented thing for making sure that my measurements are correct, so it's 2mm, 3mm, so on.
Let's describe this, right. It's a piece of plastic. It's an metal. It's an inch wide and it's 2.5 inches long. It's got various grooves in it, and each groove is a set length, is that correct?
Yep. So it starts from 0.5mm and goes up to 13mm.
Yeah. Necessary. So let's just talk about how Jerry makes these models, because the key thing to understand about Jerry's models is that they are made from scratch. There are no kits anywhere, is that correct?
Yep, that's right.
Yeah, and how did you first get into this?
When I was 16, I used to build Airfix kits. And Airfix builds a model of HMS Ajax, and I really wanted a model of HMS Perth because she's my favourite ship. And so I butchered this kit, and as long as you kept both eyes closed, it looked perfect. As soon as you open it, it didn't look too good. Then I started changing more Airfix kits to be different ones, so I got better at that. And then I found balsa wood, which is really great to work with, and it also saves your hands.
Yeah.
And then I found this scale, because this is about 3 times the size of an Airfix kit. So balsa wood plus this scale, and I've been doing them ever since.
And let's just carry on looking at this one on your desk as a good starting point. So that's got, that's a 2.5 feet long,
yep.
Is it?
Yeah, something like that.
And at what stage are you with this?
Okay, so I'm finishing off the last two bits of radar, and I've also got...
What are they made out of?
So that's out of balsa wood, plastic card, copper wire, and cardboard. I've also made over here the moulds for the aircraft that will go on her.
How many aircraft are you going to put on?
I'm going to put two gannets, ferry gannets, and two de Havilland Sea Venoms.
Yeah.
And so these white things are directors, and I made that and then made a mould, so I just reproduced them. These 40mm Bofors guns are 3D printed. I used to make them by hand, and I'm getting too old and
right.
So on, so I do those.
And where do you get the three? How are they 3D printed?
There's a company in New Zealand, and there's a guy in the UK that I know, and they are brilliant.
And so what, you send them the drawings?
I just say, I want one of those.
Yeah.
and, you know, like, can you do them up? So they do.
So they do a bit of research into exactly what it looks like. Right.
So, like, you can see the...
And do they, I suppose they then draw them online in 3D, do they?
Yeah.
Or do they get them?
I think it's AutoCAD they use. Oh, okay. Like that.
So wow!
That's the detail you can get.
That's phenomenal. My eyes are failing me. The problem with all of these miniature things, as you get old, like, I need my reading glasses. Look at it. It's a kind of a great... Yeah. I have to say, Jerry has a pair of quite highly magnified glasses and...
And those ones.
Yeah, a set of goggles you can attach to your head to look at things in a minute. So he's just handed me an example of something that's 3D printed. I haven't got a clue what it is, and I couldn't even... I will try and describe it. So it's two matching things. One, it's like a kind of a Fighting Tops style thing. It's a sort of circular platform, it looks like, and it seems to be standing on...
Oh, they're the threads.
So you pop those off, do you?
Yeah.
That's how it's been printed. You pop those off. So that looks like a kind of gun emplacement or something.
Yeah, it's a eight-barreled, they used to call them a Chicago piano.
Right.
And they were used on British warships. So they used to just spray gun bullets out and fend off the bad guys.
Okay, so what we've got here then is a collection of some things which are 3D printed and some things which are certainly not. The model that we're looking at now, this aircraft carrier, it has the flight deck. It's got the a command tower. And how long has it taken you to get to this stage?
It's taken me about 7 months because I'm building her, as I said, when she sank the Voyager. But all the plans and all the photographs of her way later on when she had all sorts of changes made. So I've had to go through photographs, plans, and try and work out what should be there at that time and what shouldn't.
Yeah.
Because I always make sure that it's as accurate as I can be, and then that makes problems for me.
I mean, I'm kind of overwhelmed by this. You've made all of these models, yeah?
Yes.
How many models have you made in your life?
About 150.
Right.
And there's 114 around here, and then there's others in various places, like at the WA Maritime Museum.
Yes, so I'm going to be visiting the Maritime Museum tomorrow. Just tell us briefly about what we'd find there.
They've got a model of the HSK Cormoran, which sank HMAS Sydney.
Yeah.
I built that. So one side, she's a merchantman, simple.
Just for those of us who don't know the story, tell us about what happened.
So HMAS Sydney was coming back from Singapore in 1941, in November, and she happened upon a merchant ship, which there's all sorts of theories about what happened, but basically somehow or other Cormoran fooled Sydney and opened fire.
So it wasn't a merchant ship, the point is, so it was a German ship in disguise, yeah?
They're called armed merchant cruisers, and so they were disguised. So she dropped her disguise, opened fire on Sydney. Sydney was very badly damaged but fought back, and eventually Cormoran was sunk. Sydney drifted off into the sunset and was never heard of since, or from then on. And so the HSK Cormoran, I've built her so that on one side she's an innocent merchant ship.
Oh, I see, clever.
Yeah, and then on the other side all her guns are exposed so you can see what she's done.
And what about the other model?
So HMAS Perth, I built her. So she's depicted.
Give us a rough period of the ship.
Oh, she was 1941. She was sunk in the Sunda Straits in 1st of March, I think it was, 1942.
And type of ship?
Modified Leander class cruiser.
Okay.
And then there's five submarines that are there. So there's they're all British types. So an Oberon, an E, a J, an S, and a T.
Yeah, I should say here that amongst these 40 ship models, there are quite a number of subs. So we'll have a look at one of those in a minute. We're now going to play Choose the Ship Model to talk about, which I'm quite excited about. And I'm not entirely sure how I'm going to base my decision. There are some interesting colourful ones. There's a very old one down there. That's definitely a Brunellian ship,
yep.
Is it not?
Right. That was the Great Eastern.
That's the Great Eastern. We've covered that before on the podcast, so I'm not going to talk about that. I tell you what, Jerry, you are going to choose a couple of models you can talk about that you're particularly proud of or you want to discuss.
Okay.
So where are we going first?
So Royal Yacht Britannia.
The Royal Yacht Britannia.
Now, that's the second one I built. The first one I built it for the then governor of WA in about 85, Sir Richard Trowbridge. And he'd been the captain of that in his last posting. And she was almost finished, and the Queen and the Duke came over to Australia, and they stayed in Government House over, around that time. And the governor, through his PA, asked if I could present the model to him so that he could show it. So he did, and a couple of days later, the PA said, oh, you can come pick it up. So, yep. And as I'm picking it up, he said, His Royal Highness apologises. He'd broken a bit, so I've often thought of sending a bill, Your Majesty.
What bit did he break?
Oh, I don't know.
Cumbersome and clumsy royals. Yeah, terrible. So,
but I did get a guided tour of the Britannia, my previous wife and I, and it was so amazing and so funny. That's that one.
Let's describe the model for those of us. I'll take photos of all the ones that we are talking about, so you can go online and check them out. But let's just, Jerry, describe this for us.
Okay, so she was built as a royal yacht, but she can also option as a hospital ship. She's royal blue hull, a buff funnel, red waterline, and various lifeboats and so on. Around the other side, there's also a garage for the Royal Rolls-Royce, which they would bring out if I didn't put that in time.
They've got these lifeboats and various other vessels, but they're also the type of smaller vessel. They're on davits halfway along the ship, but the kind that you would reflect someone of as high a status as the Queen. So there's a beautiful, I presume the original
that's
was
the
timber,
barge.
The Royal Barge, yeah. That's a magnificent looking thing. I like the awnings you've done at the back.
Yes, yeah, I've got to keep it nice and cool.
Nice and cool. That's someone who lives in Perth. He knows about the problems of the heat. That's right. So what are the awnings made out of?
Tissue paper.
What?
So I've then put liquid glue on it, and then I painted it.
Yeah. So that's set as it is in 1985.
Yeah. This one here.
So we're looking up now to a. I'm testing my knowledge, but I would say that's it's got very distinctive poles for torpedo nets.
Yeah.
So,
well done.
Thank you very much. That's about what I'm going to say. So, early 20th century, something or other. What is this?
Okay, so that's HMS Agincourt. She started life as the Brazilian Rio de Janeiro. Then the Brazilians went bankrupt, so they then put it up for sale, and the Turks bought it. But the thing about the Turks is that every village paid a few shekels or whatever it is for that. And it was finished just before World War I.
Yeah, so
and,
1914. Yeah,
yeah, and Churchill was worried that it would fall into German hands. So he basically nicked it off the Turks. And the Turkish people, who had been allies of the British, were very annoyed. And the Germans, not being stupid, went, oh, the British mean and nasty. They took your battleship off you. Here, have one of ours. So they joined in the... the German side, but she had the most turrets ever, so seven. And my understanding is normally it's A, B, P, Q, X, Y, but because there were seven, they were all the days of the week, so I've been told.
Very good. So Friday, Saturday and Sunday are at the stern,
yeah,
so there are three there. So this class is a battleship.
She was monstrous. And at the Battle of Jutland, when she fired her broadside, they thought she'd exploded because the whole line of the ship was just exploded with...
Right.
Well, they thought it might have been blowing up.
So how big were the guns?
They were 12-inch guns.
12, and there were three of them alone. Six guns, three turrets alone on the stern. Two the bows, and then two midships underneath the kind of... I don't know what you'd call this.
That was a boat deck.
Okay, yeah.
And I built her because I liked what the boat deck, how it looked. And I was able to do it that way because the British had her for a week like that before they got rid of the boat deck. So I had a week's window and I went, you beauty, I can build it. So that's how why I put it like that.
Yeah, and it's got the lovely... tell our listeners what these bits are.
So they're the wireless aerials. They're fun to build. You've got to make the circles and then you've got to string the wires around it and then tighten it up. So that's That's exciting work.
So the whole, it's like a rigging. The whole ship is connected. They go from the bow on wires up to the foremast, which is above the... and I've still got kind of cross yards. That's extraordinary, isn't it, from 1914? Up there and then across between the two masts and back down to the stern. So it does make it look, you know, almost like a traditional aspect of what was once a sailing rig, but here it's all radio.
Yeah, because at this time, the British Admiralty were starting to put their finger into the local pie, and that one there, the Monmouth, she was sunk at the Battle of Coronel.
Right, so we're looking at another completely different ship. This is literally above the one we were talking about, so up by the ceiling, and it's got a, from where I can see, a red hull. It's got three funnels, and it's got a very distinctive ram bow. So what sort of period is this?
So that was 1914 as well.
Really?
And she was manned by reservists. Poor old Admiral Craddock was given two... cruisers.
That's amazing. That's the same period. I mean, it looks like something 80 years before.
Oh yeah. So she was trying to stop Admiral Graf Spee. He was in the Chinese area, Pacific. He was trying to, you know, create hell. One of his ships was the Emden.
Yeah.
And you know, she went off and did her thing. But these Monmouth and Good Hope and a couple of other ships were basically bounced by Graf Spee, and they were sunk with all hands. They were never going to do anything right.
No, I mean, so not only have they got the ram bow, which looks like something that's a century out of date, but such limited armament compared to this monster of battleship below. So what kind of armament are we looking at with the Monmouth?
Okay, so they had 6-inch guns, but if you can see down the side there and there and there, they're all in sponsons.
Yeah.
And so it gives you a great broadside, but they were not watertight. So in anything but a, you know, a mill pond, the water would be splashing in, and so your ability to, you know, maintain your fire would have been restricted, and that's what happened to them. They were revenged at the Battle of the Falkland Islands by Vice Admiral Sturdy, I think was his name, and he had invincible and inflexible two battle cruisers, and they chased and sank all of the German ships eventually.
Yeah.
So that's that.
Amazing stuff. Let's have a turn around and have a look at the other side. This is a fairly magnificent thing. Again, a different period we're looking at here. So this is HMS Vanguard 48, so 30 years later. Different colour, different ship. Everything is different about this. It's this very distinctive kind of light battleship grey. It's extraordinary how ship design has changed in the periods between HMS Agincourt, the battleship, and what we're looking at here. So, Jerry, tell us about Vanguard.
Okay, so Vanguard was the last British battleship ever built. She was built during World War II because Churchill wanted, you know, some more heavy ships, because at this stage aircraft carriers were just starting to, you know, make their presence felt in regard to, you know, battles like in the Pacific, Midway, and so on. Interestingly, her main guns were leftovers from HMS Courageous and Glorious being made into an aircraft carrier. And so they looked around and went, well, they're there, and they, you know, modified them and that. But she was, as I said, the last battleship ever. She had beautiful lines. She sailed magnificently, and they scrapped her.
Just didn't use her at all.
No. Oh, they used it for the Royal Tour, the Queen and that on there.
Yeah.
In about 1960, they just scrapped her,
right,
which was a sad thing.
Yeah. It was interesting you talking about planes on ships, because we started off with the aircraft carrier. Remind me which one
that was. HMS Melbourne.
HMS Melbourne. And above this model of Vanguard is another vessel.
Rodney.
This is the Rodney, but there's a very distinctive little plane in amidships on the deck there. So what am I looking at there?
Okay, so that's a walrus. So all battleships and cruisers in the 20s and 30s wanted to extend their range of, you know, visual. So that thing there, the turret would be swung around facing, you know, outwards, and then that would be catapulted off via explosives. And then when they were coming back, the ship would swing around to create a calm area. They'd land there, and then the crane would pick it up and put it back on there.
Mm. And they'd work as a kind of spotter plane, yeah. Is that what we're looking at? So Rodney, a battleship as well?
Yep.
But this is a generation before...
Yeah, so she was built in 1928, I think. Right. She was called the Cherry Tree class because there was starting to be a race to build bigger and bigger battleships. And the British and the Americans realised that this was going to cost them a lot of money, so they got together... They had the Washington Treaty and the London Treaty, and the Washington Treaty sort of reduced what the British were looking at doing, and that's the result, because they were allowed to build two ships, and so they were called the Cherry Tree in some circles.
Right. Now I've got my eye in on these models. It's striking how many little spotter planes there are on them. So we've got one on Rodney here. What's above that?
That's Royal Oak. Which was sunk at Scarpa Flow.
So give us a date for that one.
1940, I think she was sunk.
Okay, and then down here's another... Here are two more vessels. What are we looking at here?
So that's HMS York and HMS Exeter. So they were sisters.
1941, 1942.
Yep.
And they both got these kind of spotter planes on them as well.
This one was actually supposed to have it... The catapult was going to be on B turret, which is why the bridge is so tall. But they realised when they were building it that wouldn't work. So... She was built after her, so they changed the bridge and, the catapults are amidships.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Yeah. Now, for those of you who can't see this magnificent room, there are, as you say, 40 models here. And there is one framed... picture of a warship from the whole history of warships. So tell us about this and why you've got it there.
So that's HMAS Perth, which was my favourite ship, and you know, which sort of started me on this. And
give us a kind of a sense of date and the type of ship.
So that was she was the modified Leone class. That's about 1933 or 4, and that photograph plus a few others. Introduced me to the concept of plans being drawn wrongly.
Ah, right, and let's talk about that.
So I was I bought a set of plans from a certain person who shall remain nameless. And he, the Perth was built, modified and refitted. And the Admiralty always drew their plans in colour. And as it changed, they would draw the changes in another colour.
Yep.
And then they'd very... lightly hatch out the bits that were wrong.
Yeah.
But this guy photocopied it, so he had no colours.
Oh.
So there were three lines, the original as built, then the refits, and then the modifications. And they were all done to the amidships area.
Right.
So this guy, instead of doing his research, which is what I pay him for and he buy it, he just went, eeny, meeny, miny, moe, and chose some plans,
right.
You know, some lines. And then, because he chose the wrong ones, there was a crew shelter which was supposed to fit between the two guns, and it didn't fit, so he drew his own. So I was about two-thirds through building it, and wow. I got these photographs, and it's like, wow, this is great. One of us is wrong.
Yeah.
The photograph or my ship, and I thought, well, maybe it's my ship. So I then had to go and
find... So on the photograph, what bits? I'm just going to go over to it now. If you point out to the bits that were...
So wrong. Between these two funnels is the anti-aircraft gun deck.
Yeah.
And she started off with singles... And then in her refit and modification, they were made in, replaced by twins. And because the twins were bigger, had more people, they had to have the crew shelter there. And all the boats had to be replaced because the gun deck had expanded.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's what happened. And ever since then, I don't think, except for the Queen Mary, I don't think I've seen a set of plans that I actually just sit down and work through.
Right, right.
Nah, doesn't work.
Well, I'm for your listeners out there, I'll make sure I've got a photograph, not only of the ships we've discussed, but also of this photograph of the Perth, which is behind behind Jerry's desk here. Where's the photograph taken?
One of the ports in the UK, I'm not sure which one. But
see if I can work it out. No, but I'm guessing Portsmouth. There are some houses visible just beyond the bow, and they look a bit Portsmouthy to me. So walking past, we're going to go downstairs now, explore some more stuff, and Jerry's got a sort of a bin full of circular balsa wood, I would describe that as. In important part. Oh, there are a couple of beautiful subs here, so we can't go down without talking about these. I've got a special thing for models of submarines. I find them very sleek. I was looking at one recently. It was the first nuclear sub the British built.
Dreadnought.
So Dreadnought, and that's at the Royal Naval College in Dartmouth. And it's a massive model and almost no details on it at all, just an enormous black tube.
Yeah.
So what are we looking at here? You've got three.
That's HMS Repulse, which was the ballistic missile sub, and then HMS Vanguard, which is the latest, although they're building a new Dreadnought class, but that's the latest that they've got, HMS Vanguard. And then below it is the HMS X-1. And she was an experimental submarine which had five-inch guns in two turrets. And she was basically going to go wandering around the countryside, finding, you know, enemy merchant ships, rise to the surface and blow them up. But the British, my understanding is that the British realised it was a really good idea, but they were the ones that had the biggest merchant fleet, so they didn't want that to work.
No.
So they said, oh, no, it's rubbish. And she did have bad diesels, and they could have been replaced, but they went, no, we're scrapping it. And we're scrapping it because it's a really bad idea. Yeah, cool.
So that was very good. Let's have a quick look at a Vanguard, because it's magnificent. So what can you tell me about this model, then?
Pain in the neck, especially around the bow. The subs are in some ways very simple because they don't have, you know, decks and guardrails and all that sort of thing. But the way I build them, because it's got a tight curve that way and then quite often it's got a curve going the other way, my method requires an awful lot more sections to make the hull,
right?
As opposed to any others. Once you get over that, it's fairly simple to build.
What's the long rectangular section on there?
My understanding is it's something to do with sonar array.
Okay.
And it also hits some stuff.
Yeah, very good. Well, I tell you what, we're going to leave this cathedral of models and head downstairs. So you lead us the way. I've just seen the three more models. I hadn't seen them. They're above us on the stairs. We're going down the stairs now, and so, there are, oh my goodness me, 15 more models.
That's, just for the fun of it, I built, they're really small, but they're the very first operational submarines ever used. And that was the Hunley, which was used by the Confederates. And then that was the Sea Explorer, which was built by the Union, but never, the Civil War had finished before she got operational. That's my oldest model, because it's an
Egyptian funerary barge.
Yeah. So I found plans of that because a friend of mine was into Egyptology.
Right.
And he showed me the book with the plans. I went, I can build that. So I locked that one up.
Magnificent. So what else have we got here? A couple more subs.
There's a steam sub.
I'm quite interested in steam submarines. We did again, for those of you listening, you go onto the Mariner's Mirror podcast YouTube page, there is an animation of the drawings of the K-class submarines, one of the K2s, which is fantastic. So these are... please go and check that out. So that's the K-class submarine animation. Here we have HMS Swordfish 1916. I presume it's bedeviled with the same problems of putting a huge steam engine in something you have to sink.
I think she was the first one that they did it to, and they went, oh, that's a really good idea. So then they built the K-class.
Yeah.
And I'm assuming you heard of the Battle of May Island?
Yes.
Yeah, so...
But for our listeners who haven't, tell us about that.
So the Battle of May Island was when a number of the K-class went out on exercise at night, and they were escorted by a light cruiser, which was behind them all. So the front lead submarine's rudder broke, or something happened with the steering. So it went broadside, and then everyone's trying to get out of the way. two of the subs were sunk. Feelers came through and scuttled one of them, I think. And then, sadly, a lot of the survivors of one of them were in the water. And again, it's at night, and the battle squadron went through and chopped them up. So very sad, but yes, the Battle of May Island.
Yeah, self-inflicted. So yes, listen to the podcast on the K-class submarines if you want more on that. So we're downstairs now, and we are going into another room, which I'm going to guess is full of ship models. What? Oh my goodness me. It is, absolutely is. So, okay. I don't know, another 40? What are we looking at here?
Something like that. So that wall there is the Australian collection, and that there, except for that one. So
more particularly kind of Australian ships. That's a very strange looking one.
Oh, yeah, that's HMAS Canberra.
Ah, yes, and that's why. So it's an amphibious assault ship. Let's talk about the Australian collection.
Right, so that one's HMAS Perth, which, you know, I told you about. This one's HMAS Sydney.
So that's Perth. That's the model of the one upstairs we were looking at the photograph.
Yes.
Yep. Okay.
And then that's HMAS Sydney.
So yeah, so give us a date for all of these.
So that was 41 for those two. Yeah. This is HMAS Canberra.
Yeah. That's 1942.
Yes, I built her as she was when she was delivered by the British, because we bought them often. That's HMAS Sydney, which is the first carrier we had.
So this is 50s. Yeah, so we've got three ships in the 40s, one from the 50s, and then down below at the bottom, a very distinctively different one. This is 1924. This is HMAS Australia Battlecruiser. Tell us about the Australia.
Yep, so she was part of the very first fleet that we had. The Australian Navy was stood up in, I think, 1911. I could be wrong. And she was obviously the flagship. She fought throughout the First World War. She was in the Pacific and then in the North Sea and that. And because of the Washington Treaty and London Treaty, we scuttled her in 1924 or something, because we were part of the Empire, and the Empire was allowed that many ships.
Yeah, trying to control the amount. These treaties, for those who don't know, were trying to control the type and the amount of sea power that was just dotted around the world.
Yeah, so, as I said, we scuttled her. But she was an indefatigable class battlecruiser, and we bought that one. New Zealand bought...
So that was built in the UK, was it?
Yeah.
Whereabouts, you know?
The Clyde somewhere, I think, maybe. Yeah, so New Zealand bought HMAS New Zealand, and then they had the Indefatigable. But they were actually, so I've been told, worse armoured than the Invincible class, which was the first battlecruiser class. So Indefatigable blew up at Jutland, just disintegrated. Interestingly, it's always claimed that it's because they were battlecruisers, and, you know, they were very poorly armed and blah, blah, blah. But there's a lot of research now, which is, and they've dived on some of these, and the British concept was to smother the enemy with fire, and to do that you had to get, you know, a high rate of fire going, which meant they totally disabled all the flash type integrity, because they stacked dozens of shells and cordite in the turret, so they still kept feeding it properly, opening the door, closed door. It was all up sitting there. So when they got hit on the turret, yeah, it wasn't good.
Yeah. I can sense a podcast on the Australian Navy coming up. So what else have we got here? We've got some... this very interesting one, you can see inside the hull. So this is an exposed hull, and it looks like an aircraft carrier.
No, she's the Empress of Britain, which was...
Yeah, well done, Willis, got that one.
She was the flagship of the Canadian Pacific Company. And she was the largest merchant ship sunk during World War II. She was coming into, I think, Liverpool, and she was bombed and set on fire. So they were then towing her into port, and a German submarine saw her and went, "You beauty." So he torpedoed it, so she sank. But she was a beautiful ship. She's got she will have, a white hull, a blue band, bright green sort of emerald hull underneath, and three buff funnels.
So what we've got going on here, I've just looked down and there's a huge pile of bits of boat by my feet.
Yes.
You're working on a vessel upstairs, and I assumed you'd be working on one at a time, but that clearly isn't the case. How many have you got on the go at the moment?
Well, I've just started 63.
Right. What does 63 mean? Number?
63 ships.
You've just started 63 ships?
Yeah. So my plan is to finish these ones.
Okay.
So they've been on the go for years.
And you're pointing at four.
Yes.
Yeah,
so there's Ark Royal, Glorious, Good Hope, which was sunk with Monmouth, Edinburgh, and there's Iron Duke and Manchester. One of the things if there's a class of ship that served during the war, I'll try and find one that sank and I'll build that one. So I'm known as the person that builds ships that sank, which is not true because some of them didn't sink. But it's my way of saying thank you to the guys that, or the people that died, you know, for our freedom sort of thing.
Very good.
So that's that. But it makes it worse.
To tell me about the 63. I thought you meant ship number 63. So tell me about the 63 ships you're about to build.
Okay, so all the Australian ships that I've got are the actual warships, and I don't have the support ships. So there's about 15 or 20 support ships that I'm going to build. So then I'll have basically a collection of the RAN from the start up to today.
Amazing.
As, you know, just one collection. So, which I'd like someone to buy.
Yeah. well, I'm sure we can tell everyone so that episode. You're going to need a bigger house.
I do negotiate with my wife. every time I finish one, it's like, oh, it's lovely, dear. Where's it going? I'm working on it.
let's go back out through here. And I want to talk about the large model, which is in the main room of the house here. So walking through, and they're all in these beautiful boxes, so they're all safe. Mm. I should say that this is clearly a magnificent model. What have we got here?
Okay, so that's the RMS Queen Mary. She was built in the 30s in Clyde. And,
so it's a passenger vessel, Cunard vessel from the 1960s.
She was built in the 30s.
Okay.
She's actually now a hotel in Florida, but she's sinking, I think.
Right.
Not doing well. She was built in the 30s. The shipbuilding companies were going broke because it was in the Depression. So the British government wanted to maintain their shipbuilding expertise, so they funded a lot of this, and so it was built. She served with the Queen Elizabeth as extremely fast transports going between the UK, or mainly the UK and the US. She was taking, I think it was something like ridiculous number, like 16,000 US troops from the US to the UK. And there's such a thing now that everyone recognises as true called rogue waves. Up until about 20 years ago, they said, that's just rubbish.
That's true. Oceanographers have been working on it, and they were talking about waves almost combining with each other as a freak moment of fetch or a freak bit of swell to cause unusually vast waves.
Yep. So she was in a storm in the Atlantic, and out of nowhere, this wave came and smashed her on the broadside and turned her 50 degrees over. And if they say that if there had been another 2 or 3 degrees, she would have gone turn turtle. And someone in the 70s must have read about that and thought, that'd make a great movie. So they put out the Poseidon Adventure. And a lot of the footage was actually taken on board the Queen Mary, as she is, as I said, the motel in Florida. Mm. Very interesting model.
Wonderful model. Let's just describe it for us.
Okay, so she's...
How big is
it? Monstrously long.
Yeah, so a metre and a half?
Hull red, black sides, white superstructure, three funnels, red and black, nice Cunard line colours. Lots of lifeboats. Each one was made.
They're amazing. 12 on each side, at least 12 on each side, with each with a canvas cover.
Yep. Canvas covers are great. Means I don't have to put the detail in. and she's got the dressed overall with flags and that.
Yeah, and all of the portholes are visible. So, four decks? How many? What are we looking at?
Three. There's about six decks, I think.
Okay, six decks. Down. How do you cut the small portholes in the sides?
A file and my fingers. It was fun. The actual portholes are okay, but those ones that you can see in the white were sort of oval shaped.
Yeah.
So having to build that was fun. And like cutting the windows, so they're pieces of black paper, all cut to the same size, and then glued on. So that's fun.
It would be a pure comedy show just to see what would happen if you let me loose on your decks. I would have stuff stuck to me. My fingers would be glued together. I would have broken everything. You must be immensely in control of your body, Jerry.
Most of the time. I have been known to say a few choice words. And then my wife says, you still do this because it's a hobby and you enjoy it.
Yes. Very good. And the flags, you've got wonderful flags. You make all of those as well?
Yeah. So any markings
just
on the ship.
Just to say how many flags there are on this model.
60?
60. Like I think there are 60 and they are... what's going on with the flags? First of all, how did you make them?
I just found photographs of the various flags, so I then cut and pasted those into Word, and then tidied them up, make sure they're the right size and that, and then print them off via Word. And it's just dressed overall, so it doesn't mean anything. It's just making it look pretty for the visitors that would be coming in.
Yeah. So you print them off and then cut them with a very sharp scalpel.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, so I can do medical operations on you if I wanted to.
I want to leave. He's going to put me in one of his boxes.
No. You'll never be found. So that's that one.
Let's talk about the propellers, because there are obviously propellers on all of your vessels. Yeah. Most of the ones which aren't sailing. Actually, I mean, very few sailing vessels. There's one over there.
Yes.
So how do you make these propellers?
Just cut out the shape, and then with two pieces of rod, I'll twist them so that just cardboard.
Okay.
So they're not authentically, like if you cut through them, you've got all the different shape going through. They're just shaped like that. So every one of those is cardboard.
How do you make them look like their metal?
Painted with bronze. Humbrol bronze. Mm. What else do you want to know about it?
I think we're done with this one. I'll tell you what, we've had a good chat. I'm going to give you the chance to take me to one model we haven't talked about in your house, and we can talk about it. Don't mind what it is. I'm quite excited. Where's he going to go?
I know.
Straight forward. We're going to the Australian room back.
Yes. So she's waiting for her lifeboats. That is the Australian hospital ship Centaur, and she was torpedoed. Yes, she's in there to keep us safe because that's Manchester.
Oh, I see. Right. So
that was cheating.
So the label's wrong here. But so what we're looking at is a hospital ship. So let's just describe the vessel before we talk about what she is. So I'll leave it over to you, Jerry.
Okay. So she was a blue funnel. Small freighter called the Centaur. She operated sort of around the Australian waters. She was then taken over by the Australian Navy to operate as a hospital ship.
So to identify her as a hospital ship, we've got a white hull, green stripe. On each broadside, there are three red crosses. If seen from above by an aircraft, there's a large one at the stern, large one midships, two more large red crosses, another one on a hatch. There's one on the funnel. There's no way you could misidentify this vessel.
Yeah, and she was sailing up the Australian East Coast, I think in 44, and she was torpedoed at night with the loss of 300 people's lives.
That's very sad.
It was lit up. Nobody could miss that she was a hospital ship, but yeah, she was sunk.
How do you identify a hospital ship at night?
She will have spotlights and that on the red crosses. Yeah. On the funnel, lit up like a Christmas tree. So, it's not something that you'd sit there and go, oh, I don't know what that is. She's almost finished. I've got to put the lifeboats on, which are being 3D printed by my friend in the UK.
Okay.
But then she'll go into a proper case, which will have her name.
Right, yeah. And the lifeboats will go on these
davits. So there's two each side there and one on the other side there. And then she'll be finished.
Well, I tell you what, Jerry, I'm blown away by the amount of work you put into this. It's a real lifetime of work, and all in such minute and magnificent detail. I think it's a tremendous collection. I think you're doing wonderfully, and I can only encourage you to carry on. Thank you very much for letting me come and see everything.
63.
You have got the 63. How long is that going to take? I'll give you a certain amount of time.
So that's the smallest one, which is a 50-foot tug, which is an RAN support ship. And then where is she? Somewhere in there is the Savannah. And the Savannah is the very first profitable nuclear-powered merchant ship.
Right, right.
And she's now a museum ship in, I think, Galveston.
Right. And I didn't know about that. That sounds like a really interesting...
Oh, she's a beautiful-looking ship.
Interesting ship for...
They made her half, high-class, passenger and half merchant. So she never was one or the other. So she actually made a massive loss. And also there was, in the 60s, Chernobyl sort of, we're going to die. So lots of people said, well, we're not going to have you in the port. Yeah, right. So I was like, yeah, whatever. So she didn't last very long, but she was a beautiful ship. And, when we're looking at climate change now, no smoke, no pollution. If all the ships in the world were, powered by that,
Cool. Well, I tell you what, I'll come back in a decade and see how you're getting on with it.
Yeah.
Things. Well, Jerry, thank you so much.
No worries. Thank you.
Thank you all so much for listening. Now, for all model makers out there, all model enthusiasts out there, please search Maritime Innovation in Miniature and go and check out this Lloyd's Register Foundation's new project I was telling you about. Please also don't let this be the last thing that you do to interact with our fabulous podcast. Go to YouTube, find the Mariner's Mirror podcast YouTube page, and just have a look at some of the videos we've been creating. It's absolutely phenomenal, an ever-growing library of some of the most extraordinary and innovative videos showcasing our maritime past in new ways. My current favourite is the clever animation of an original engineer's plan of a steam-powered submarine, the notorious K-class subs of the First World War. The animation shows how the engines fitted in and how, in theory, it didn't leak when the steam funnels were up. As always, please remember that this podcast comes from both the Society for Nautical Research and the Lloyd's Register Foundation, and check out what both of those institutions are doing. The Society for Nautical Research you can find at snr.org.uk, and please join up. There's a vibrant international membership. It's a fabulous way to meet people and also to learn all about the world's maritime past from the world's very best maritime historians.